The world of sports media has become dry, boring, and predictable. That's why we created the Free For All Sports Podcast, starring Greg Reynolds, Joel Raggett, and Steve Bigg. Nothing personal, it's only sports.
The Free For All Sports Podcast is back just in time for the fall. It's been a long summer away, but we got plenty to talk about. Greg Reynolds is with us. Joel Raggett is with us. I am Stephen Bigg.
Okay, hold on, Steve. I gotta cut you off real quick. It's been a while since I've actually enjoyed hockey, and it's probably not, considering the way things have started this season, I may not enjoy it again this year. From what I've seen already in the preseason, this league is completely coming unglued. Anyone who's seen the stick-swinging incident between Phil Kessel and John Scott should be completely and totally appalled. Granted, John Scott is 6'8 and probably 260 maybe. He's an absolute beast. He lined up against Phil Kessel on an offside draw and challenged Kessel. Kessel kind of stepped back, started to kind of back away. Scott's obviously trying to goad him into a fight, and Kessel immediately chops him, two hands right across the legs. Now, there's a couple of ways to look at this. Granted, Kessel's a little bit smaller. John Scott's an absolute monster, and this is probably the only way Kessel's going to defend himself. But the only way that Buffalo's coach is going to send him out to face off, John Scott's a defenseman. He has no business lining up against Phil Kessel. Kessel did something during this game in order to incite this kind of retaliation. But what makes it even worse is as the rest of the Toronto Maple Leafs and guys kind of jump on top and try to pry Scott away from kicking the ever-loving hell out of Kessel. Kessel skates around, comes back behind Scott, and two-hands him in the back of the legs again. Now, the thing with this is that, one, you got to learn to take your beatings like a man. If you're playing that kind of hockey where you're being a bit of an antagonist, and Kessel needs to get his head out of his ass because, one, if he's spending any time in the penalty box, he's hurting the Leafs. And, two, if you're going to play like that, you got to be ready to drop the gloves and defend yourself. Not swing your stick. I'm sick of this shit. From Bertuzzi doing what he did, it wasn't even Bertuzzi. The real one that I think of is always Marty McSorley when he two-handed Brashear across the head, granted again, off the shoulder pad and into the side of the head. But these guys need to stop swinging their sticks, and it doesn't matter the size difference. That is not the way you defend yourself in hockey.
Are you crazy? You're sounding crazy right now. You know that. You're comparing a stick to the skull to a stick to the back of the leg, which happens 1,000 times in a game.
Swinging your stick is swinging your stick. You cannot swing your stick with the intent to injure, and that's what he's doing.
It happens 100 times every game.
But you're chopping a guy in front of the net and sitting there and sliding your hands up towards together like a golf grip, and then two-handing the guy across the legs is something a little bit different than just kind of chopping a guy in the legs just to get his attention.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
they're very different.
You know what? Fighting somebody who's a fighter as opposed to fighting a goal scorer is a completely different thing, too. Phil Kessel said, no, man, I'm not in. I don't want to go. This big brute, John Scott's only on the ice for one reason. He wants to beat the ever-loving hell out of Phil Kessel, and Phil Kessel wants no part of it. John Scott doesn't back off. Here's the difference. If you were outside a bar and you saw a big, monstrous guy just about to go unwind on a little guy, you would say, man, that is absolute assault. But because it's on the rink, because they're playing hockey, it's allowed for a big guy to go assault a small dude for absolutely no reason. Man, if I was facing John Scott, if a guy like John Scott was running after me, wanting to beat the hell out of me, I would grab the nearest weapon too and try to back him off.
Thing is you got to almost think of it like, you got to take the backstory. What did Kessel do?
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It does matter.
Joel, let me finish. If you want to get Phil Kessel back, get somebody Phil Kessel's size to go try and fight him. Not John Scott. Or get somebody to go level Phil Kessel when he's got the puck. Don't get John Scott, who's a big brute, to go try and punch his face in because you think preseason hockey means that much.
Well, preseason hockey means nothing. But the fact that these guys, There's a backstory to it. I mean, for all we know,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
What if Kessel speared him in the balls earlier in the game? Then is he okay? Then is it okay to do it?
To go assault somebody? No, it's not okay to
assault somebody. Well, to beat the shit out of him? At least he's fighting with fists. He's not getting him back with a stick. That's the thing.
He got him once as if to say, man, I'm not fighting you, back off. Refs jumped in, and then he gave a little bit of a cheap shot because he's so Kessel.
Okay, so the swinging the sticks thing isn't okay because you just called it a cheap shot.
If it's John Scott and Phil Kessel's like 5'9", yeah, it is.
The thing is we don't know what happened earlier in the game. Kessel did something.
It doesn't matter what happened in the game.
It does
matter.
Why? Because he did something in order to bring this upon himself. He did something.
Unless he had sex with John Scott's wife somehow during the game, it doesn't matter. He's not allowed to go chase him around the ice and try to assault him.
It's a fight's a fight. Hockey, it's a fight's a fight.
Willing partners squaring off into a fight. Assault is chasing somebody around and beating them up defenselessly.
Well, I think what Kessel needs to do is amend his game, because if he's bringing this sort of potential retaliation upon himself, he's doing something that he shouldn't be doing.
Like, you're Kessel's the only agitator in the league. Get out of here. Guys like Alex Burrows, Rafi Torres, they're all over the NHL right now. You're pointing out Phil Kessel because you don't like the way he specifically plays the game. But agitators like this are all over the NHL. They very rarely stick up for themselves in a fight. That's why Alex Burrows is so hated in the Western Conference and around the league, because he never sticks up for himself and he's an agitator. It happens all the time. That's why you have enforcers to fight each other. You don't fight the little guys.
But that's wrong. The reason why it's like Don Cherry always talks about. He talks about the hyenas in the NHL versus, and then there's the gazelle. There's the lions that are out there, and you've got the gazelles, which should be. And it was Gretzky. It was Yzerman. It should be Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel is far too talented a hockey player to be doing this kind of nonsense that is getting
guys. You brought
up
Gretzky and Yzerman. They did it too.
Oh, come on. You're going to tell me Gretzky ever two-handed a guy in the back of the legs like that? Are you kidding?
Are you kidding me? You don't think he did?
I'm going to jump in here because it's obvious that you two are never, ever going to agree on this topic. And I don't blame you. You both bring up valid points. I think the crux of this issue is that Kessel wasn't really given any kind of punishment for it. Three preseason games is nothing. I thought, you know, the first whack, I guess you can sort of make the argument that maybe it's reactionary and you're not thinking and you do something stupid. But the second whack that he takes is clearly intentional. It's clearly meant to do some damage. That, to me, is worth 10 regular season games minimum. Minimum. Whether you are a repeat offender or not, it is worth a 10-game suspension for two-handing, swinging your stick. Any other guy would have got 20 games, especially if they were a repeat offender. Three preseason games is nothing. Listen, if you want to check it out for yourself, you can go to our Twitter, at FFA Sports. We'll post the link to the video. Obviously, it's a very polarizing issue, and another polarizing issue that's coming up is going to be who's got the best chance in the Major League Baseball playoffs. To me, the most interesting storyline going on here is obviously all the press that the Pittsburgh Pirates are getting for making the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. The last time the Pirates played a playoff game, Barry Bonds was in their lineup. That's a long time ago. You know how many years he spent in San Francisco? His time with the Pirates was a really, really long time ago. Baseball itself was different. This was before we had any of the steroid talk or anything. I think that the Pirates have a serious shot to at least make the World Series because I think they stick well in close games. And I think they've got the kind of roster, the kind of pitching staff that just seems to grind it out. What do you think, Greg?
The Pirates had a huge lead in the Central like 2 months ago over the Cardinals. The Cardinals weren't even a factor in that division, and they Pirates did. That's a new verb that I'm bringing to the show. The Pirates did away. And now they're struggling to hold on, and they finally clinched their rat little playoff spot. They're going to get their one-game play-in, and they're going to get smoked in the wild card. And there you go. You're going to get the Pirates in the playoffs, quote-unquote new playoffs, for one game. I'm looking down their roster right now. Yeah, they have okay pitching if it holds up. But where's their hitting coming from? You take out McCutchen, where's their hitting coming from?
Well, that's why they went out and got a guy like Justin Morneau out of Minnesota. And granted, Morneau is not the blue-chip hitter that he was maybe a couple years ago before his concussion trouble, but he's still the kind of guy that can contribute. And you're right, McCutchen is definitely the centerpiece of that offense. But look at some of the reclamation projects they've had. Russell Martin has been bounced around for the last couple years at catcher. The Yankees didn't want him, so what does he do? He goes to Pittsburgh and starts crushing the ball. They've certainly got some pieces. They don't have a vaunted lineup like the Dodgers or maybe even the aforementioned Cardinals or the Cincinnati Reds. But I think come playoff time, there becomes less of an emphasis on hitting, and I don't think it's hitting that wins ball games for you in the MLB postseason.
But it's clutch hitting, and you don't get clutch hitting unless you've been there, done that, like the Cardinals have, like the Dodgers have. Nobody on the Pirates can clutch hit. Nobody's been in big game situations as a pitcher, unless you're talking A.J. Burnett. I don't think any of their other starters have. They haven't really done anything. So you're taking a bunch of newbie kids in their first time in the playoffs and asking them to do something great for a franchise who so desperately needs it that they champagne celebrate because they're in the playoffs. Well, they're not even really going to get a home playoff game. They're going to get destroyed, and then you're not going to hear them again.
Well, they do have a home playoff game because they'll host. It looks like they're going to host Cincinnati in the first round, but even that's
not, yeah, it's not
tough.
For sure yet.
But that's a pretty tough matchup. I mean, the Pirates head-to-head with Cincinnati didn't have that great of a record. So the thing is, playing Cincinnati could be, if there is such a thing as a stumbling block right off the bat, if they can avoid St. Louis early, possibly in the next round, if they get past Cincinnati, I'm with Big. I think they could be a team to reckon with. But right now, the way they're coming into the playoffs, kind of stumbling a little bit. And I think piratesing it, Greg, is a little harsh already since they didn't actually not make the playoffs. They're backing their way in, but they are in, which is, I mean, for the Pirates is a step in the right direction.
But Joel, they're in for one game.
That's better than 30 other teams. I mean, the Pirates weren't expected to do anything.
So here you go. You have one game, Pittsburgh Pirates versus the Cincinnati Reds, who have been in the playoffs the last, what, 3, 4, maybe even 5 years now?
I don't think it's quite that long. The last couple, yeah.
I'm guessing you brought up the Pirates because you think the Pirates can actually do something in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the Pirates are just a good team to root for because they're a blue-collar lineup, and they've been suffering for so many years.
You know, they're also a blue-collar lineup is St. Louis. St. Louis has a blue-collar lineup. Named stars off of St. Louis.
Yeah, but they've won recently.
It doesn't mean you're not blue-collar.
Yeah, but a lot of those guys still have rings, you know what I mean? They're not a team that's been out of contention for 20 years that has a bunch of ragtag guys that have never been there before, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. You're rooting for the guys that are down in the dumps that have resurrected their team and everybody's rooting around them.
Not even so much that. I'm just sick and tired of seeing the same teams in the baseball playoffs every year. I like some variety. And the Pirates provide that. St. Louis, Cincinnati, I mean, we've seen these guys before. Boston, we've seen these teams before in recent years. It's time for somebody new.
Do you think the Pirates have an actual chance to make it into a deep run into this year's MLB playoffs? You can let us know. There's going to be a poll up on our Free For All Sports Facebook page. You got to like it first. Now, I am so happy this week because I'm not a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan by any means, but I can actually start watching their games again because finally they have benched that weak-armed quarterback who can't win them games that they've been rolling with for the past 3, 4 seasons. Josh Freeman finally takes his place on the bench, got his C removed from his jersey. Greg Schiano's finally making some smart moves in Tampa Bay.
Well, here's the thing about Tampa Bay is Tampa Bay, then this team, the way things are starting to shake down, is no longer a train wreck. They've become a dumpster fire. I mean, between your new star defensive corner having a run-in with the coach, yeah, granted, they went and cleared the air. Sure. I'm not buying that for even a second. And let me give you a little background about Mike Glennon. Mike Glennon is not going to be the answer that the Bucks need benching Freeman. This is a guy they drafted, was at one point rumored to be the top quarterback in this draft, ahead of Geno Smith, ahead of all these other guys. Well, Mike Glennon, no. Mike Glennon is not going to be the answer.
But he's more of an answer than Josh Freeman, who's proven after 5 years that he's not the answer. He's had a shot. He's proved that he can't do it. And so why not give the rookie a shot, see what he can do?
Well, granted, I mean, this season's a complete write-off. But the thing is, do you want to fail with a guy who's going to make mistakes because he doesn't have the skills but knows the system? Or do you want to go down in flames with a guy who doesn't know the system and doesn't have the skills? That's what Mike Glennon's going to bring to the table.
Well, Mike Glennon's at least an unknown. You can put him in and he could surprise you. Right now, you know, when you go into a game with Josh Freeman, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get like 108 yards passing, 90 of those to Vincent Jackson because he's a beast. You're going to get about 88 yards from Doug Martin because there's 9 guys in the box. And then you're going to get a loss because Freeman threw a couple of picks and he can't do anything else with his offense. The guy's numbers have been going down and down and down. And I'm surprised it took this long for Greg Schiano to be like, wow, we need a change at the most important position on the field.
Here's the thing about the unknown. That is such shit. You know, the ideas that you can bring in a new quarterback or a backup quarterback and he's never played before, no one knows what he's going to... If he was good enough to start, he would have started right from day one. He would have earned that job in camp. He's got the offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach, the head coach, the wide receiver's coach, all these eyes on him. He can prove that he's the better player, but he didn't. He's not the better quarterback, or he would have started day one. And experience is nothing. If you're better, you start. You know who can prove that? Is Russell Wilson.
You know who can prove you wrong? Colin Kaepernick.
Kaepernick got in because what's his name was hurt and took the ball and ran with it.
He was going to go in anyways.
Kaepernick wasn't the better quarterback. Kaepernick was a better fit and made more plays once he got on the field.
So don't you think Kaepernick, that could happen with Tampa Bay as well with Mike Glennon?
No. And if you were going to go ask Harbaugh right now which quarterback he'd rather have, who do you think he'd say?
I think he'd say Kaepernick, because Kaepernick was his guy from the draft on, and he got stuck with Alex Smith, and as soon as he got a chance to boot Alex Smith, he did.
He's 1-2. The Chiefs are 3-0.
Yeah, let's not forget that Kaepernick came in a pretty cushy situation, too. The San Francisco 49ers weren't 0-3, and with a coach on the hot seat and a yappy defensive player that sold the coach out in the media. I mean, this is a completely different situation. Kaepernick had it pretty good coming into his situation in San Francisco. What does Mike Glennon have? Mike Glennon has a finished season after week 3 in Tampa.
Let me tell you what Mike Glennon has. Mike Glennon has the muscle hamster. He's got Vincent Jackson, who's an absolute beast. He's always going to get double teams. That leaves the rest of the field open. He's also got a very strong defense that they built over the offseason that, if you look at the stats, has actually been playing really well this season.
But would you even put them in the same category as San Francisco last year?
No, but we're not comparing Colin Kaepernick to Mike Glennon. I was comparing the fact that Joel said, if you're good enough to be a starter, you will be a starter. Well, Colin Kaepernick went to the Super Bowl. So
Yeah, but he's right. He's right about the Russell Wilson thing. They went out and signed Matt Flynn to this big contract out of Green Bay based on one game, and Russell Wilson won the job in camp, and everybody was surprised that it happened, but here they are. Year later, Matt Flynn's no longer with the Seahawks, and Russell Wilson's their quarterback.
Matt Flynn wasn't established in Seattle yet. You have to understand, Alex Smith was established in San Francisco and hadn't done anything to lose his job, right? Josh Freeman, established in Tampa Bay, hadn't done anything yet other than a bunch of crappy seasons, but he had the captaincy on his chest and the approval from the owner and the last coach, so they had to roll with him.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about Freeman being the incumbent and working from there. There's no question about that.
That wasn't the case in Seattle. I mean, they wanted to see what Matt Flynn could do, but then Russell Wilson came in and showed what he can do. But you get fresh eyes on both of these guys, whereas you have coordinators and coaches and owners that get attached to the other quarterbacks when they're incumbents. So they don't look at rookies the same.
When you're fiscally obligated to one guy, and the owner is sitting there saying, okay, this is what we're paying this guy, you are, and you're supposed to play him. You're supposed to play him. You don't have to, but you're supposed to. The bottom line, and the thing with the NFL, is the best players play. That's all there is to it. Whether the owner has given him $42 million over 7 years or whatever, the best players play. You could be in the league for 100 years, and the best players play, period.
Is that really always the case?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So, okay. If you think so. All right. So Freeman's out, Glennon's in. Freeman's not going to see the field again in Tampa Bay. So where does Freeman go? Because there's a few teams out there that are desperate enough, Jacksonville, to actually take somebody like this. What do you guys think, Joel?
Again, I think you're underselling Chad Henne. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's the natural landing spot. Same climate, no pressure. He can go fling it around and keep losing, and it doesn't much matter. I don't think I went through the rest of the league. I can't think of any other landing spot for him at all. So Jacksonville makes the most sense. But at this point, what are you going to get? Maybe a fourth-round pick at most.
Yeah, I don't think you get anything for him. I think he just walks, and at the end of the year, I don't think they're going to be able to move him. I think you're just going to have to cut bait, and he's going to walk into whoever offers him a contract really is going to be the most logical solution. But if I had to pick a team that always needs a quarterback, how about Cleveland?
Oh, they got their sights on Johnny Football.
I'm sure they do, but there's never any guarantees. Just because you got your sights on someone doesn't mean you get them.
It's going to be Johnny Football and Ben Tate in that backfield next year. It's going to look a whole lot different. I'm going to say Josh Freeman ends up in Winnipeg for the Blue Bombers because he's not getting another NFL contract. Dude sucks.
Head-to-head with head-to-head with Tim Tebow playing out in Montreal.
No, he's too good for Canada. He's too good for Canada.
We're not churchy enough.
Have an idea or topic for an upcoming podcast? Visit freeforallsports.com
or hit us up on Twitter at FFA Sports.
One of our favorite segments to end off the show. Yeah, right, hoser. We make somebody a hoser for the week. And I'm actually going to start this one off, and I'm saying D. Wade. Yeah, right, hoser. He's all mad because Dwayne Wade got bumped from the top 10 NBA players in the league right now by Kevin Durant. Dwayne Wade got all mad because KD said Dwayne Wade's out and James Harden, who used to play in Oklahoma with Kevin Durant, is in. And D. Wade sent something about championships and sent him a Twitter message like, that's the way you start beef these days in the NBA. D. Wade, LeBron won you championships. D. Wade, Shaq won you a championship. D. Wade, when you didn't have another superstar around you, you didn't win a thing. So no, you're not in the top 10 players in the NBA. Get over yourself and stop fighting over Twitter. Show yourself on the court.
Jalen, or not Jalen Rose. What's his name, Rose? He's not even in that top 10 list.
Derrick Rose.
He didn't
even make it.
2007.
No, just saying. All right, my right hoser this week goes to, oh dear. This is going to Baltimore Ravens tackle Bryant McKinnie. Bryant McKinnie this week decided after their tremendous win over the Houston Texans, he was going to take the team out on a little party. They're going to go clubbing, doing their thing. So they rented themselves a party bus, loaded it up with strippers, and Jacoby Jones, who's been out with a knee injury since running into one of his own players in the opening game, blowing out his knee, got bottled by one of these strippers named Sweet Pea. Anyone remembers the name Bryant McKinnie? He may be the one who hosted the Love Boat up in Minnesota back when he was up there, and he got pretty well everyone who was married divorced and caught the whole team in shit for that. So Bryant McKinnie, never, ever, as much fun as it would be to go partying with you, don't call. I don't need a divorce, and I don't need to get cracked upside the head with a bottle. So, Bryant McKinnie, yeah, right, hoser.
You're blaming Bryant McKinney for a crazy stripper? He's the one who's always linked to these things. He puts on these parties. He's responsible.
Listen,
it was his birthday. It's not his fault. He brings these people around. That's why I'm not partying with Bryant McKinney, because he's surrounded. He just seems to be surrounded by bad karma.
I'm saying he sounds like a good time.
Well, there's no question, but there are circumstances to good times, pal. You'll learn.
Party boats.
Since when did NFL players care about consequences?
Well, when you get a bottle across the back of the head and you're bleeding like a stuffed pig, I imagine that's probably a bad consequence.
Since when did NFL players' wives care if they cheated?
You don't know that. You can't make that statement. You don't know that.
It's all pro athletes. Come on.
Jesus Christ. Just make these statements.
I'm going to make this segment an NBA sandwich of sorts. Greg called out D-Wade for his yeah right hoser, and that sort of has something to do with mine. My yeah right hoser is everybody involved in this story coming out of the NBA earlier this week that they are planning on for at least one of the matchups this season between the Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets, putting players' nicknames on the back of jerseys instead of their last names. You know, King James, D-Wade, KG. I think this is maybe the dumbest thing ever in all of the four major professional sports. Like, this is something that the XFL did. And you know how long the XFL was around? Only a year. And granted, you can't blame the downfall of the XFL on players' names on the back of jerseys. But this makes the NBA look ridiculously Bush League. We all know that they cater to all their superstars and that the superstars control the NBA, but this is just taking it to the next level. This is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. Nicknames on the back of jerseys? Yeah, right, hoser.
Man, it sells jerseys, sells new, more jerseys, makes the league fun. I don't have a problem with it at all, to be honest with you.
I'm with Big. I think it's stupid. What about nicknames on the front of jerseys? Like Bolts instead of the Lightning. That's stupid.
You got a problem with that too? Why?
Oh, I hate it. It's retarded. Sens instead of Senators. No.
Why?
You're not the Sens. You're not the Sens. You're the Senators.
Right. So when you say who's playing, and are you going to say it's the Ottawa Senators versus the Toronto Maple Leafs? Or are you going to say it's Leaf Sense?
So are you tight enough with LeBron to call him, hey, yo, King James, what's happening? No. Ooh, referring to guys with their nicknames, if you're not tight with them, is the corniest cheeseball, cheese dick thing you can do.
Why?
Referring to Jerome Ginla as Iggy is gay. Gayer than gay. You don't know him. He's not your friend. You don't refer to people who aren't your friend by nicknames. It's like you don't give yourself a nickname. It's weak. It's stupid.
I gave myself a nickname.
Well, Harry Beaver Balls just kind of caught on. We ran with it, but...
He hated me. I played in the XFL.
Oh, yeah. Played for the Las Vegas Collection Agency or something. Las Vegas Repos.
If they want to have nicknames on the back of their jerseys, it's fun. It's a little juvenile, but at least they're having fun in their league. When Roger Goodell takes spinning the football out of the NFL, one league's going one way, the other league's going the opposite way. Maybe they can meet in the middle and both try to have a little fun.
I could live with that.
Not me.
No, all right, not me. Not Grandpa.
I'm buttoned down and oppressed.
All right, let's end this episode off on a happy note. We're going to give out some David Putty high fives, and we'll let the grumpiest guy go first. Joel?
Okay, my David Putty high five is actually a pending David Putty high five. It could possibly go to the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers. Here's all he has to do to get my David Putty high five. Get on the phone, call New York, say, hey, New York, what do we need to do to get Hakeem Nicks from you? He's not playing for you. He's not hurt. He just doesn't want to play for you. We'll take him. Whatever you want, we'll take him. Finally, a deep threat. San Francisco, Kaepernick turns back into Kaepernick. San Francisco starts winning. They roll everybody. What do I do to get my David Putty high five? So it's halfway up. He's just got to meet me somewhere in the middle.
I don't necessarily understand that high five because it's all speculation and you just made it up.
I'm just telling you how to fix the 49ers, and if you fix the 49ers, he gets my high five.
Why don't you just wait till Michael Crabtree gets back?
Because that might be at the end of November. He can get deep. That's all they need. And there's no one else available.
So it just to recap, Joel gave nobody a high five because nothing happened. There were zero high fives given out by Joel. Nothing happened. I'm going to give my David Putty high five to the Zach Brown Band because I went and saw them last weekend in Saskatoon, and it was awesome. One of the best concerts I've ever been to. And a country band broke down in the middle and did Metallica's Enter Sandman, and it was dope.
Well, that's better than Joel's because you actually gave out a high five instead of a pending high five.
Well, and it's a whole band. Okay. There's like 10 of them, so I gave like 10 high fives.
But he called something dope, so that kind of cancels out the whole good
part.
Yeah,
but you also referred to something as gay, which is super homophobic, so I'm still up on you.
Hey, they're both good statements. Stuff is gay, stuff is dope. I don't have a problem with either of those.
Listen, dope Macklemore told me nothing was gay, so I'm sticking with him.
I don't think I get that.
All right, so I'm going to give my David Putty high five to the current players on the Calgary Flames. If you're shocked, how do you think I feel? I actually got my first taste of Flames preseason on Monday night when they hosted the New York Rangers. The Flames are going to be brutal this year. They are not going to win very many hockey games. But based on what I saw, they are at least going to be exciting to watch for the first time in many, many years. Because most of those guys just want to be on the team. They're just happy to be playing hockey. They played it loose. They played it fast. There are no expectations this year. And I'm actually looking forward to watching the Flames play because they are not going to be playing this boring shutdown style that they have been for so many years. There's no guys that are going to be hogging all the ice time and doing nothing with it, like Jerome Iginla. Hate to say it, but it's true. The Calgary Flames, I think, are actually at least going to be a fun team to watch this year. They're just not going to win any games.
At least their guys are going to try. They're going to try this year.
I do like how you called them fun, fast, and loose during preseason. Everybody's fun, fast, and loose during preseason. Nobody cares.
Yes, and I'll give you that. I know it's just the preseason, but you know what? Preseason or not, that was the most entertaining Flames game I've been to in at least 7 years.
And good God, can we cut down on the preseason in the NHL here?
Oh, I couldn't believe they televised these games. When did that start happening?
You couldn't believe it? I couldn't believe they didn't televise training camp over the start of NFL.
When did preseason games start becoming an event for them to televise?
Since broadcasters decided that Canadians are so stereotypical that all they want to do is watch hockey day and night, and we'll do anything to get back to puck night.
Yeah, right, Hoser.
Until next time, this has been the Free For All Sports Podcast. Visit freeforallsports.com or tweet us at FFA Sports.